Hi, hello. Thank you very much for the welcome. Sean, where's... There he is. Cheeky, making us all hold hands. And thanks very much for the invitation to speak here today. I'm a Wurundjeri Noongar. I come from the lower southwest of WA, so I'm not from this country. So for that reason, it's just as important for me to acknowledge the traditional owners, the Whadjuk Noongar people of this country, because I'm from somewhere else. I'm going to spend the next 10 minutes just sort of reflecting, I guess, on the Indigenous business sector, where we're at the moment, comparing us to some other jurisdictions, thinking about the importance of the sector and where I think we might need to concentrate our efforts next. So I've recently had the occasion to perform business development work for a native title prescribed body corporate. And the population of this PBC, as it's called, is characterised by very high unemployment, which is one story or one side of their story, because the hidden figure is that within the population of their group was that almost 60% of the people were not even participants in the labour force in the first place. And because of structural barriers, there's a high proportion of this 60% just simply opting out, just plain opting out of the system, receiving no benefit, zero income, relying on family, moving from place to place just to eke out an existence, but because of the barriers of the system, just simply opting out. So we hear about unemployment figures, but we don't really hear about this extreme rate of non-participation, which is repeated again and again in Aboriginal communities. The question arises when talking with groups is how is it that we close the gap if people are opting out in such extreme rates? All we're going to get is ongoing poverty. All we're going to get is ongoing low education, low skills, low employability. But Indigenous business, to a large degree, actually overcomes many of these barriers. And this is why the PBC commissioned the work in the first place. They know this, as do most Aboriginal people. They know that if they don't create the business because of the structural barriers and because of the racism that their members face, they've got slim chances of employment. They've got slim chances of engaging. And this, in particular, is why the Indigenous business sector is so significant and so important. It provides a medium through which to overcome these barriers, to upskill members, and to drive prosperity in communities. I can't stress how important overcoming these barriers and creating prosperity is. It's not simply about economics. Prosperity has a huge range of social and cultural dividends as well. But it takes time, and it takes the right sort of interventions. The Indigenous business sector in Australia at the moment is effectively, in my view, on the ground floor. I've dug out a few figures, and it looks as though Supply Nation registered Indigenous business across the country generates somewhere around $1.5 billion in revenue. This is a pretty good result. It's a good result in comparison to, say, 5 years ago, but is tiny relative to the country and relative to Indigenous economies in other countries. For example, the New Zealand economy, which is slightly bigger than WA's, around the $200 billion US mark, its main sectors agriculture, horticulture, forestry. The Maori economy within that is estimated to be $50 billion. Maori people produce 40% of New Zealand's forestry, 50% of the fish, 30% of lamb production, 30% of beef, 10% of dairy, 10% of kiwi fruit production, and that's a big export for New Zealand, so it's worth mentioning. If we were equivalent, WA's Indigenous economy alone would be worth around US$45 billion. The Australian Indigenous economy would be worth around US$300 billion. Of course, it's not really a valid comparison given a range of other differences, but it does serve to illustrate where we are. In 1971, Alaskan Indigenous peoples settled their common law native title claims for a package of around $1 billion and 9% of the Alaskan land area. 1971. Just reflect on that. The Alaskan economy, by the way, is about a third the size of Western Australia's. Now, this was distributed to 12 for-profit regional corporations and around 200 not-for-profit village corporations. The business of one of these regional corporations, the Nana Regional Corporation, previously known as the Northwest Alaskan Native Association, in 2014 earned $1.6 billion in revenue and employs more than 15,000 people around the globe. So the business of one corporation, which represents about 20,000 odd people, is as big as our entire national Indigenous business sector. This illustrates how ground floor we are in Australia in terms of our sector. There's a really important feature of the New Zealand and Alaskan examples. Not only do they seek to overcome the same barriers that I've talked about previously, and drive prosperity, but they put enormous resource into social and cultural programs as well. Businesses are viewed through a cultural lens, and cultural values are consciously and overtly applied to business decisions and investment decisions. Common social cultural programs include scholarship, for example, and there's enormous emphasis put on scholarship, training, and upskilling, because being educated today makes you a master of tomorrow. Poverty relief, elder support, language immersion, connection to country, supporting ceremony, these things with really strong cultural utility. They've used these businesses not only for their individual economic, cultural, social functions, but for a community and nation building function as well. And these are very important features of Indigenous businesses. So while I think the last few years have been a great success, we've got quite a long way to go. We've got quite a bit of development to do. However, if we keep on the path that we are now, we can make good steps towards this over the next decade. At the national level, we've had the Commonwealth Indigenous Procurement Policy, or IPP, since the middle of 2015, and this has really driven a huge amount of growth in the sector. The federal IPP has got a number of flaws, as do all policies, but in my view, it's probably the best Indigenous affairs policy that has ever existed in Australia. The reason for this is because it's incentive-based and because it's predicated on an exchange of value, which is very, very different to the way that government normally makes policy, especially in the area of Aboriginal affairs. If there is an issue to raise with the federal IPP, is that it hasn't really had a lot of impact in Western Australia. Most of the business opportunities from the direct Commonwealth spend exist in the eastern states, and that's because that's where the spend of the Commonwealth is situated. That's reflected by the concentration of Indigenous businesses in New South Wales and South East Queensland, and according to federal government figures, 60% of Indige businesses are located in those two places, about 10% in Western Australia. Indigenous business development in WA has been hitched to the mining, oil and gas sectors, which have been very progressive, in my view, in the manner in which they have approached the engagement of Indigenous business. Now, while there's still a lot of activity, however, as we all know, in recent times in WA, things have come a little bit off the boil. Many Indigenous businesses have been narrow in their focus and are now struggling. Have also struggled with normal business processes like demobilising and the cycles of business. And many of the services provided by Indigenous businesses are at risk of being automated. So there's a sense of, great, we've just got here, now what? So there's flux in the sector. people are sort of looking, particularly in areas like the Pilbara, Goldfields, to a lesser degree in the southwest, who's going to go broke because of this situation? Who's going to merge? Who's going to buy who? And to a large degree, this is pretty normal, but we need to remember that the sector is in its infancy and that it has enormous utility in overcoming the structural barriers that I mentioned previously. And for that reason, intervention to support it is required. The state IPP is an excellent development in this area. Unlike the federal IPP, it'll have an impact here in WA, obviously, because this is where it's based. It'll massively broaden the foundation of opportunities that Aboriginal businesses can take advantage of. It will steady the sector and it will assist its growth. But I can't help to think back to a conversation with government officials that I had about 5 years ago, when myself and a team of Noongar people, including John's brother, were promoting a policy like a state-based Indigenous procurement policy. The response was, you're not ready. We won't be able to meet your target, the targets. And as harsh as this is, there's an element of truth to that response, capacity. There's a number of state departments now wondering how they will meet their targets, who don't consider themselves quite ready as well, and who don't really have the Indigenous business network. And in situations like this, the impulse is to take the easiest path to meet the targets, and therefore the black cladding criticisms arise. There's always someone really happy to create a structure that's convenient. It meets the definitions, but there's also significant barriers to entry when engaging with industry, whether it be financial, pre-qualification or otherwise, although I note that IBA have continued to develop a suite of financial products that are strongly focused on barriers to entry and business continuity, which is excellent. And Eddie, the chair, will be speaking later, and congratulations to this has happened under his tenure. There are major opportunities on the horizon, for example, the idea of a global LNG hub. Aboriginal people need to be part of the consideration, or Aboriginal businesses need to be part of the consideration of these developments. The importance of the sector, the Indigenous business sector, is such that you're not ready yet is no longer an appropriate response. We've come a long way, but we need to turn our attention to processes that ensure that people and businesses can be ready, because organic growth isn't going to get us there in the time that we need. If the IPPs and the policies of industries are the drivers, we need to do a little bit more to help the entrepreneurs start up and to take SMEs to a spot where they're more sustainable, that is startup and business acceleration. This is to ensure that ideas can be tested, developed and financed, and to ensure that SMEs have the ability to work through pre-quals, diversify, mobilise, demobilise and garner the skills and knowledge not only to be sustainable but to grow. I'd very much like to see an Aboriginal SME or two become big business and potentially list on the stock exchange. The infrastructure to support this has developed enormously in the last 3 to 5 years. We just need to make sure we now get the development right so businesses can become sustainable and grow. I'm going to tie off my talk there because we have a panel discussion soon. I'd like to thank you very much for your time this morning and your generous audience, and I look forward to speaking with you more on this topic. And I'd also, now it's my duty to introduce Alan James to come up here and to provide his perspective from a business operator's point of view. Thank you.